me for the last almost 2 years. Plus, I've been investing in startups with a lot of focus on disruption, with AI, fintech, edtech, etc. So this is since retiring from telco, I'm full-time investor as well as involved in AI governance.
Thank you, Dr. Thank you,
my name is Bahman Babar. First of all, thank you to STEP and the MENA Fintech Association for giving me the opportunity to be here. I don't have such an illustrious past, so I don't know how I'll be able to better that, but generally being in the payment space, work with Visa, FAB, and MoneyGram, and primarily now with the consulting and the MENA Fintech Association. We're trying to see how financial systems can incorporate latest emerging technology, including AI.
Thank you very much. Perfect. Thanks so much for having us here. So my name is Birja, and I'm part of the MasterCard team. I look after the fintech partnerships for the region. So for those of you who don't know, we cover Eastern Europe, Middle East, Africa, around 80 plus markets in the region, looking after digital finance providers, lenders, buy now, pay later, and now more recently gaming and paytech space as well.
Thank you very much. So we're really looking forward for an exciting session. Sure, lots of invaluable information will be shared. So I will kick off with a very generic question. We'd love to hear more of your insights. I know the session is tagged around banking, but we holistically cover the financial sector. So I would like to reflect on the fact that if we look at financial sector, inclusive banking, fintechs, etc., as of today, and compare it to 3 to 5 years back, what do you think fundamentally has changed and what is driving that kind of change? So we'll start with you, Dr. Abdelmalek.
I think the main thing that I'm witnessing today, which brings me to the same experience we had in the telecom industry. What Osman mentioned previously, telco became a dumb pipe. It's exactly because of the resistance the telcos had previously, not realizing, understanding the changes that are happening in that domain, and not realizing the kind of competition, and not being open-minded into a collaborative model, living or being captured in the legacy systems that they had. So they were kind of speaking nice language, but in practice, they looked up, they closed the doors in front of all the disruption that was happening, and then that disruption took over. Today, the telecom industry and all the related activities have been taken over by non-telecom players. I think the banks are repeating, as of today, exactly the same experience. They are still locked into their guesses. They're still resisting. And I think if banks do not learn from the telco experience, same thing will happen. All those players in the fintech outside the banking system will take over, and banks will become exactly what telcos are today, dumb pipes. And this is the challenge. I'm seeing the same story with itself, and I think this session is extremely important, where we can share things that banks can do, or regulators or players in the classical financial sector can do, so that they would not have the same sad ending of the classical telcos. By the way, when we talk about telcos, globally, there are almost 3 MVNOs for every MNO. MNO is the normal telco operators like Etisalat or Du. Globally, there are 3 MVNOs for each one MNO, and this is where the AI is playing. Today, globally, the MVNOs are really using AI in a way that is so amazing, so innovative, that's so personalized, that's so instant, that really accommodates the client experience in a magical way, where the AI agents are in full play, but did not happen in the telco. It happened in the disruptive that took over the telco. I hope we will be sharing some ideas of what can be done in the banking sector today.
I'd like to maybe piggyback on the comment to Dr. the fact that I do see from the positive end, there are a lot of banking institutions who realize that their risk appetites are just not built to be able to accommodate any emerging technology. Now, on the positive end, it is being seen as a challenge, and as Dr. Ramad said, that the banks do realize that there's a lot of the meat that is being eaten up by these emerging technologies, because I'd like to take you back to 2013 and 14 when we were in fintech back then. Fintech was trying to not really go for the core businesses that banks make money from. I think the banks are now realizing through the Clarity Act and the Genius Act out in the US that the very intrinsic value propositions of the banks, which is deposits and a couple of other things, are being targeted by this emerging technology. And there is already adoption of that in the emerging markets like Nigeria, like Morocco, a couple other places, where people, where they have access or need to use US dollars, they have found alternatives. And for that, they might be able to keep it in alternative method. So I think from a challenges perspective, I think the banks still have that legacy issue that they continue to struggle with, which comes from the fact that they're highly regulated and making changes is tough. But the opportunity that I see is that I come from an era where my family lost a lot of their wealth to BCCI, right? So, I mean, I see a lot of, I'm still a millennial, I just make it barely to that one. We still have memories of having lost our money in banks. So these emerging technologies that are looking to sidestep banks, they still have a trust issue. And I believe that's where the opportunity banks have to be able to collaborate very actively with those emerging technology players and then provide something to the customer whereby the trust remains with the bank, they remain the custodians, the technology part is then left with the technologies. That's the opportunity that I see.
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty much, you know, summarizes it. But I think if we were to have this panel probably 5 years ago, we would have all banks on stage with us. That's probably the fundamental difference versus now, is that the way that the consumers are banking is so different to what it used to be. So previously, it was traditional banks that you would go after and, you know, open up a bank account. Now there's digital banks, neobanks, fintechs, telcos offering similar kind of solutions for you to actually store your money and to transact and do payments in. So the time has really changed, and really kind of focusing on the consumer, how we can ensure that we optimize and personalize the experience for the consumers to have the right fit for their everyday use case. So I think what the banks need to start kind of stepping up for is to kind of track that consumer journey and to understand where are the gaps that they have, which they can serve immediately, which maybe some of the fintechs or the telcos are covering today.
So back to you, Dr. Abdul Malik. So as you mentioned, great experience in telecom transformations for years, working heavily with the ecosystem of startups now. So you mentioned a lot about the learnings, right? So if we want to drill deeper into that and maybe point out the top one or two learnings that banks has to capture as quickly as possible now, what's your advice on that?
I think the key learning lessons is basically to think in a very innovative way, that bank as a platform. The minute the bank shifts to become a platform, which allows all these players, the fintech players, to plug into the platform. Today, with the APIs and cloud and AI, it's so easy. Okay? And just imagine that the bank becomes a marketplace where all these new ideas, new services, new products are plugged into this marketplace. And imagine if the departments of the bank can plug and play, take these different, you know, applications or services. Okay? And that decision becomes so automatic. Today, if you are an AI fintech company, the bank will automatically think acquire, buy. Okay? They would not consider today, I'm a platform. Okay? that mindset of a platform is mind-blowing. It will change the whole outlook of the industry. And it's a win-win, where the bank wins. Imagine what will happen in the service of the bank, the client base of the bank, the revenues of the bank, if they go into this bank as a platform, or having the IPO marketplace. Now, also, I think it's very important for the concept of having a sandbox where the regulator comes in and the cycle becomes short. And the, you know, the cycle today is too long for that AI company, fintech company, to become out in the market. That has to be shortened. And if you have a sandbox and you say, okay, if this is a revenue criteria, at this threshold, automatically, through this marketplace, this AI concept or service is automatically introduced through this bank. If it's something that has to do with the regulations and safety, there are thresholds. The minute that it goes through this threshold, so just come up with the mindset of opening the doors, not the mindset of putting obstacles. Because the minute you have this mindset of putting obstacles, things become complicated. Now, I mentioned that I worked in the fintech industry, and one of the companies, it was a payment company. And because I come from the telco, and this company is in Jordan, and it was immediately after I finished my work at Zain, which is one of the leading telecom operators. And as I mentioned, learning from the legacy of telecom, I thought, okay, now it's the it's my chance to do something in the payment industry. And the company was owned by me. I was the largest shareholder, but I had 9 banks. And I think I can write a book about the struggling I had with the banks, because I had to, all these ideas of virtual cards. I'm talking about 2013, okay, almost 9 years ago, okay. So at that time, that was not the prepaid virtual cards where it will allow people to go and buy wherever they want to go to buy on the internet. The first fight I had from my shareholders, from the banks, okay. And I received the approval from MasterCard, from the Central Bank of Jordan. They went and lobbied against me in the Central Bank to revoke the license that I had, because I wanted to go that step further. Plus, imagine the information I have as a payment company. So I was thinking, okay, this information, if I do use it in a smart way in the digital marketing, the resistance I had, and then I had to exit that investment because I could not really, it was like really a huge war. So what I'm saying is, the bank as a platform, marketplace, open the door for these new technologies to join rather than taking over the industry leader.
So building on top of what Dr.
Abdelmalek
has shared, Virgie, and you also working with the wider financial sector, where do you see AI producing the most impact as of today?
Yeah, so within MasterCard, actually over probably 1/3 of our value-added services is AI-enabled and has been that way for now 3 years or so. And it's actually the core of our business as well. So we use AI to score transactions, to authenticate transactions, and authorize transactions as well. But where we see a lot of the investment actually going in is around cybersecurity. So we've been doing a lot of investment and M&A in this area for the past few years now, because we see the value of the solutions that we can plug in with MasterCard data as well as our fintech and bank partners as well. So one example could be, around decision intelligence, for example, where we look and analyze merchant data, device data, the consumer data, and we look at how is the person actually holding the phone? How are they typing their password in? Through that, we're able to authenticate and actually create a score for that consumer. Similarly, for example, we look at MasterCard spend behavior to be able to score, credit score a customer. That becomes quite important when you're looking at lending capabilities or buy now, pay later, for example, as well. And we're working with the likes of telcos, for example, to kind of join the data to be able to score customers in underserved communities. Because one of the biggest challenges you have is in more developed markets, of course, you have card data, people are using the cards on a daily basis. But when you look at Africa, where it's primarily mobile money driven, then you need actually a different capability to be able to score those customers as well. So we're trying to develop in-house as well as acquire and invest in, also with partnering with some of the fintechs and the banks as well.
That's great. So back to you, Babar. So when you look at all this transformation, adopting AI, looking into digital assets and tokenization, which you have lots of experience around. So always the challenge as mentioned so far, one of the biggest challenges is the integration, bringing legacy to all of this transformational technology and disruption in the industry itself. So can you talk to us more about some of those challenges from your experience when you're bringing the two worlds together and maybe scenarios of how we can overcome them?
I think I'll start with AI first. From a sense of what we're seeing, what I've experienced, is around the fact that it starts with the culture and the talent. I'll limit myself to these two conversations. I think what is happening in the industry is that everybody is aware that that is the most disruptive technology that is around what all the models and stuff are doing. What we believe is that there needs to be awareness and training done within the most highest levels of the organizations to really be able to get their anxiety levels a little bit lower, because in most of the conversations and closed boardroom meetings, it is my generation, the generation above us, who are in a little bit of decision-making positions, are scared. I think the word that I might use is scared. Everybody is worried about the legacy around using certain technology and realizing that 17-year-old programmer from OpenAI or other just came up with another way to be able to process the same data and come up with efficiencies. So I think the opportunity that I see is the culture within the organization and the fact that you'll be able to like take on these things with the limited liability of saying that, okay, there's going to be advancements going forward. The second element is that I'm a founder myself. My youngest contractor is 16 and a half years old. And he's actually a cybersecurity consultant. And he's the best that I've ever seen in terms of my learning knowledge. So I think in terms of identifying the right talent with emerging technology, AI, and others, it would not be around a person coming with 6 years of experience or 8 years of experience. I think it's about being able to hire the right people who can then build out the controls and the systems and the policies which would allow those legacy systems to move in slowly. I think it's a bit of a marketing scenario right now where I think, you know, I don't represent a firm anymore, so I can say that openly, is that there's a lot of marketing which is saying we're doing this in AI, we're doing this in digital assets, we're doing this in tokenization, and actually what's happening on the ground. I think there are lots of missteps that are occurring just because of the type of like race that you're in. I think from my personal perspective, I think the next opportunity area is to be able to prime those legacy systems, because the systems themselves have no issues. They have issues, but they can easily be technically plugged. The problem lies with historical data and years and years of migration of this data has led to data integrity issues whereby you're not even sure that if whatever data you have is accurate. But I think going back to this point about the fact that one of the biggest opportunity areas and the wins have been around fraud analytics, have been about human stress modeling, and have been other areas where the data has actually been used properly, and there have been insights where the underlying systems, which are AML, compliance, fraud, have been very efficient. You need to take a risk-based approach. Take the one that's the least riskiest and has the regulatory or risk appetite consideration. Go with that, learn from it, and have this continuously iterate.
So I would love to go back to the collaboration. So as you mentioned, collaboration with fintechs, tech platforms is essential and it's accelerating. So Dr. Abdelmalek, from your experience, again, we can always talk partnerships, but they can be successful, they can stall, and sometimes they can fail. So can you reflect more on that? What can make a successful partnership versus an unsuccessful partnership?
No, I think having challenges or failures is quite normal. I mean, this is the natural path of evolution or development in any, not only the banking industry, any industry. But I think if we look at the bigger picture, one of the things that we mentioned is the financial inclusion. So if we take that, for example, as a topic for collaboration, and what Bryce mentioned a second ago, today, I'm not looking at a country like Emirates where basically everybody is banked, but most countries you have a lot of people who are either unbanked or underbanked. In the traditional system, the qualifications for getting credit using the classical models used for FICO or whoever looks at what has a salary, receives a transfer in the bank, had a credit before, credit history, payment history, which automatically disqualifies and removes a large population who are definitely bankable or who definitely are qualified to receive financial services. Now, this is where the collaboration comes in. Telco bills. If you plug into the system, this is where AI comes in. So if you plug into the system, the social interface, there are people who are doing e-commerce activities, okay? Influencers, people who have channels, mobile wallets, rent payments. There are so many different aspects. If you plug it into the system, the bank would be able to give facilities to a larger base. Many more people would be able to receive these financial services from the bank. And by the way, there are so many studies that have been published, and all these studies confirm that the risk becomes way minimized once you plug in these additional data into the risk assessment, rather than sticking to the classical risk assessment that's currently used by classical banks. So this is a model where collaboration works in the best of the bank. And by opening up, allowing these new AI compliance or risk assessment elements come into the play, I think population or social development wins, because all these people who are now deprived, you know, imagine somebody works in the delivery, or a lady that makes food at home and sells online. All of these people today, they don't have financial statement. They don't have a bank account. So in today's world, they're not qualified. But they are, you know, they are. These are people who are making a living, and they are, you know, to me, I think most likely in many cases, their default rate will be way less than the classical the people who are dealing with the banks. So it's a win-win-win, socially, economically, more money for the bank as well as for the AI industry.
Yeah. So, Richard, do you want to add more also from your experience with fintechs and?
No, I think it's spot on. So buy now, pay later boom, really kind of came up a few years ago here for this exact reason, right? So it's serving an underserved segment. Let's say, take Tabby as an example. Over 50% of their customer base is Filipino, for example. And they're sending money home, they're splitting their transactions up into multiple payments to be able to afford it. Now that consumer, to me, is actually eligible to be banked, because that company that's actually providing that service is now able to score them. It's different. It's not the traditional way that the governments would score them, but they have some database now that they can actually take. So if tomorrow Tabby was able to actually give that data and feed it into the government system, then we have a completely different ecosystem that we've just built. So this is where actually the FI and the fintech space kind of merges together. I see a lot of opportunity in cross-collaboration in that sense. And even, for example, the expense management platforms, which banks potentially do not want to build internally, they're now going and outsourcing these to other fintechs in the markets as well. So there is kind of this, I think, nuance and different way that we're seeing that the market is developing. And we're going to probably see more and more of it as the fintechs emerge as well.
So from the collaboration presentation talking about AI and basically generative AI and agentic AI. It's providing and coming with lots of promises on improved productivity. So, Babar, I would like to hear more your thoughts of where this can really be deployed and really provide the real value without compromising or causing operational risks.
It's a very interesting topic, and I just see that my very good friend Ronit has just entered the room, and no pressure. I think from my personal perspective, it's a very nascent space. And I'm talking from a perspective of a bank. I come from a regulatory background. Explainability is one of the biggest challenges of using these kind of technologies there. I do believe that it's there in the future, but in terms of the banking use case, I think it's tough. Now, talking about fintechs and emerging markets, I think it is already being technically utilized in the e-commerce space, and others like individual will have more examples there. I still believe it's very nascent. It's again a marketing lingo that has been going around. When you do get and bite into the technicalities of it, the use cases have been quite challenging, but I'm not saying that it can't be done. But I'll rather pass it on to the other panelists if they have more specifics on it. My experience has been that.
So actually, this brings me to the question of, yeah, there are challenges. We keep talking, it's easy to talk about it, very hard to integrate it, right? So maybe Dr. Abdelmadi, you want to reflect on some of those challenges?
First of all, the culture. I think we need to have AI awareness, starting with the board leader of the banks. That's a key point. That's a starting point. Because in certain countries, banks are, more of a family company, controlled by families. And I think there have been a lot of changes in terms of the corporate structure, definitely. There have been lots of progress. But I think awareness at the board level is very important. And the same thing has to go at the senior management level, where certain certification or education or training must be introduced so that instead of having this fear, because right now there is a lot of paranoia when it comes to AI, either in terms of replacing us and taking our jobs, and lots of this is going around, and in the banking industry, that's definitely the case. But we have to reassure the banking sector that human in the loop, it's a must in the banking industry, and actually, it's more business, it's more stability, and not the opposite. So I think that is the on the banking side, where awareness and culture and training, the same thing with the regulators. And I think on the other side, the consumers, the trust. I think we have to do a lot of work to build this trust, because the integrity, data integrity, this is a concern from the consumer side. And I think that fear needs to be addressed as well. And I think with success stories, the financial inclusion I mentioned earlier, that could be a win-win-win. And it's not difficult. Once that, because for that to happen, a lot of information has to be shared. My telco, my social media, etc. And that can only happen if you have trust. And once that happens, the consumer sees the results, the bank sees the results, the regulator sees the result, and the country as a whole sees the result. And I think that is a best case practice that could really address the challenges that we currently have in the banking sector.
So, taking it from there, so reflecting on partnerships, right, and how can we help banks and legacy financial institutes really accelerate this rather than doing things from scratch, getting so super stuck into the process. So what's your experience around this and also about how this can really accelerate the adoption?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the point around kind of cybersecurity as well, right, being a key kind of concern, and trust kind of coming hand in hand with that as well. So as I mentioned, right, most of our investments have been going into the cybersecurity space for this exact reason. And one of the reasons, the fundamental reason for it, is actually cyber crime is the world's third largest economy. Actually, we were just kind of take a step back and look at it. And so it possesses a huge threat. And so we need to, as banks, as fintechs, or you know, business owners, just decide whether we want to build in-house or you know, partner or buy these kind of solutions to be able to kind of advance our existing capabilities. So again, it goes back to the ecosystem play around partnership and how do we actually create a better consumer experience, better journey, a more secure and safe journey as well for the consumer, regardless of where they're actually getting their payment needs. It can be through a bank, it can be through many other platforms as well. So I think for us, it's the most important piece around the trust and cybersecurity. And
which is great, because I want to jump to regulations. We wrote it a lot in the session. So I'll start first with the relationship with regulators and how you see things, Babar, coming together in terms of that relation, making sure that it doesn't hinder innovation, because both are a bit contradictory sometimes. So I'd like to hear more from you.
So I'd like to make a parallel to this pre-COVID. There was this massive push by fintech and banks to do onboarding remotely. I don't know how many people are from the banking sector here. I used to do that. Very interesting story, and I think that might answer the question, is the day the CEO of your company goes from his hotel room to a conference hall like this in a robocar is when he will have the confidence to be able to then take a call on a big deal. So I think the bit that is needed is that it's outpacing regulation by a mile. I mean, in terms of advancements that are occurring, I think the other industries will lead the path in terms of when you have robotics plus mobility, and I think logistics, I would say, are the three areas where I believe, like the likes of Amazon and Microsoft and others, I believe the financial sector will take a pause and take a lead from when those regulators have been kind of like addressed and issues come through. I think that will be a big factor there. From perspective of improving efficiency in the banking operations, I think it's already happening. I don't want to name names, but the top three banks in the UAE all have amazing use cases in the fraud, consumer protection, and also behavioral analytics, whereby they are able to then take a full portfolio and then be able to recommend the right things. I think small steps, small successes, then going back to the regulator and being able to explain the explainability element of it will continue. I think in the UAE, I think we are very, very pampered. I don't know, I'm sitting here, I'm saying this, but we're extremely pampered to our regulators. The doors are always open for us to come in. So my view would be to continuously pick up the item. As an association, AI is a huge element, and we do have one of our chairs here. We pick up this with a mindset of continuously engaging with the regulator as one ecosystem, which is fine.
Yeah. I think we're very fortunate to be living in the UAE, who was assigned the first AI minister a few years ago, right? Even when AI was not discussed so often. And so I think this is a really unique market and a unique region to be actually setting the stage for what's to come in the other markets as well. It's an example.
No, I agree, definitely. The regulatory framework, maybe not only across the board, have been always way, way more advanced in leading example. And I think the government summit that happens in the Emirates tries to show the world leaders what can be achieved. But I want to go back to the regulators. I think the regulators are key players. And I think it's the time for them to be the shakers and the movers of AI in a responsible way, in an inclusive way. Because without the regulators stepping in, and I mentioned the concept of having a sandbox, and it's not a new idea, it's been used in many countries. I don't think we do have a sandbox for the fintech
I think it's my call to the regulators in the region to have this sandbox, which will allow innovators to basically have their innovation unleashed, okay? No limits. And I think that this is where the banks will be either motivated or forced. And it's up to them to plug in and move forward. But I think the regulators are a key player in the game of having AI play in favor of having a better future for us in our children.
So I think we will never have enough from this conversation and your great expertise. But before closing the session, I would like you to leave the audience with one sentence on what you think would define a winning institute. It could be bank, fintech, etc. By 2030, what is the key thing that everyone needs to have a call on action today to have a winning status in 2030?